Good morning.
Good morning,
everyone. My name is Lamo. Churchula is not here today, so Venerable Churchula will be giving the teaching today. And when she comes, I don't know exactly what she'll do, but please stand to out of respect for her and for teachings. And then she'll lead us maybe in some prostrations. If you're new to the center or new to Buddhism, if you're not comfortable prostrating, that's perfectly fine. Just remain standing. We'll be saying some prayers in the white prayer book. Right here at the first base sheet, and then the dedications will be on the first pink sheet. Everything will be from this book. And I think Donna has some an announcement.
Good morning. Just a quick update for you on our annual appeal. You may know this is our largest and most important fundraiser of the year that we count on that to get about half of what we need to keep the center running and offering the Dharma for us. And the goal this year that the board set for us was to raise $108,000. And I'm happy to tell you that we have, at this point, we have raised $82,851 in pledges, and that's about 77% of our goal. We only have $25,000 to go, so we're very excited. And it's still within the tax year, so take advantage of that. There are pledges outside in the lobby in the literature rack that's next to the bulletin board, and if you just fill one in and drop it into one of the boxes or mail it in, then we will happily thank you for your generosity and your support of the center. Thanks.
So Churchula is already in the Gompa, so if they'll just stand and we'll do some prostration.
Welcome, everyone. We'll start with a few prayers.
So in the first base sheet in the white prayer book, let's start by chanting Shakyamuni Buddha's mantra three times, the four immeasurables in English, and then in Tibetan right below that.
Taya Tao.
Sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Sentient Tom Chedewa. Turn the page go to the mantras at the bottom of the pink page. Let's do some mantras. Let's do 8 Chenrezig mantras and then 7 Green Taurus mantra. Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. 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 Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha.
Now the children are welcome to go to their classes. If your child has never been to a class, please accompany your child and fill out a survey form and find out where to pick him up. Today is Sunday, December the 23rd, 2012, Sunday Teachings by Venerable Chökyila.
Well, welcome everyone. Hello. So before we get started, let's take just a moment to rejoice at this really rare opportunity we have to spend this hour together trying to figure out maybe how to have a little bit of a happier mind and to really reflect on all the amazing things that had to come together for us to have this, you know, for the founders to think of the idea of having the center, and then the request to Lama Zopa Rinpoche to have the center be here, and then Rinpoche appointing Geshe Gelug to come as our teacher, and for him being here for the last 15 years, and on and on and on. Every single person here contributes to that. So just take a moment and rejoice about how amazing that really is. So I appreciate you being here today. So for those of you who have been here in the last few weeks, Geshe-la has really been emphasizing that we learn how to do the meditation of the 9-round breathing. So I wanted to take just a couple of minutes and continue the reminder of how that works. I promise I won't call you out. I'm just wondering, is there anybody here who hasn't been here before, so doesn't know what I'm talking about? Okay. Great. So I'll just do a real quick review of it, and then we'll have a chance to practice. And for those of you who may not be familiar with it, I'll sort of walk around, and you can grab me and say, hey, wait, what's going on? I don't get it. So the idea of this meditation is to help us really focus our mind and get rid of all the wasteful energy we create. Geshe-la talks about how when there are a lot of little streams all running in different directions, there's not much force to any one of those streams. But if we can bring all those streams together into one flow, then that river has some strength. And so that's what we're trying to do with this particular meditation, is clear out all the things that cause us to have the many streams and just bring it down to focusing to one. So this technique has been around for a long time, and it's called 9-round breathing. It's done a lot of different ways. So if you've seen it done differently or read it differently in a book, it's all good. But this is the way that Geshe-la teaches it, and he wants us to learn this. So what I'll do is I'll do a quick review of how we do it, and then we can break up into pairs like we did last week and act as though you're teaching it to each other to make sure you've really got it down. Okay, and we'll just do that for a few minutes. Okay, so it's three sets of three breaths. And so you start out with your left hand, and you use your ring finger, and you place it on your left nostril, and you inhale through the right one. And then you switch sides and exhale through the left. And you do that two more times. And that's the first round. Then you switch hands to the right hand and cover the right nostril and inhale through the left. Exhale through the right. And do that two more times. And then inhale through both. And exhale through both. And do that two more times. And that makes 9 rounds. So if y'all wouldn't mind, just we'll do this for just maybe 5 minutes. Just work with each other. Find a partner and try to explain it and practice it. And then if you have any questions, just raise your hand. I'll walk around and we'll all figure it out together. Thanks, everybody, for being willing to participate. Yeah. Any questions? Does everybody feel like they're getting it? Yeah, Keith.
So we were discussing in our group about...
So we were talking about motivation and dedication. Would that be good to do before this one and after this one? I've seen us do different things where we kind of jump right into that, and then if we do a deeper meditation, we'll do motivation and dedication. So I just wanted to see your thoughts, perhaps.
Always great to motivate ahead of time, set the intention, and to dedicate at the end, because that sort of seals up any positive things you create, you know, a nice package to put in your bank account for the future. So always good to do. Yeah. And sometimes when it's something quick like that, you know, I might be lazy about it, but really, ideally, yeah, always, yeah. We set the intention at the beginning with the prayers, and we dedicate at the end, so within this hour, it's kind of all contained, you know, but still, always good to do, yeah. Anything else? Okay, great. Well, we'll be able to report back to Geshe-la when he comes back next week that we're doing our homework. So, very good. Okay, so I thought given the season, we might talk a little bit today about generosity and about peace. And, of course, I'm going to talk about inner peace because that's what we do. And so we'll be watching a short video from His Holiness towards the end. But first, I wanted to talk a little bit about generosity, something that's probably on most everybody's minds lately. And, you know, the teachings talk about three different types of generosity. There's the charity of the Dharma, which is, you know, the teachings, and the charity of fearlessness, which can include all kinds of things like, oh, saving an animal's life or, you know, helping someone who's literally fearful, you know, all these things. And then the material charity. And I think that's probably the one we most often think of is that third category. And that's certainly what this season focuses on. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about that material charity and have us think a little bit about what does it mean to give without attachment? Because I think so often strings are attached, right? It's awfully hard to give completely with no strings. So I'm going to talk about a couple of different examples. But first I'd like to read a quote from Lama Yeshe, the founder of our parent organization. He talks about that attachment is really the cause of all our problems, whether it comes to how we give or anything else, that attachment is right there at the root, one of the three main poisons. And that it's through, you know, acting under the influence of attachment that we create most of our negative actions, or at least our negative thoughts. So I'm going to read just a short paragraph from Lama Yeshe. He says, "With our present attitude of self-cherishing attachment, we can't even give somebody a cup of tea with genuine pleasure. We can't give anybody anything without expectation. Well, perhaps you do give things, practice charity, but check with what kind of mind you do so. I'm sure that when you give others presents, you have some kind of expectation. If you do give without any expectation, completely for the benefit of others, with no thought of enhancing your reputation, with no ulterior motive such as, I have to give him a gift because he's my relative, or if I don't give her a present, she'll freak out, then it's okay. But that's not how we usually give. Most of our giving has nothing to do with true charity and is simply an ego trip. As long as we give with expectation, that's not true giving. We're not really dedicating. We have the expectation, if I don't give him a present for his birthday, he won't give me one for mine." So, giving without attachment, right? So, when we think about that, we might think, well, I'm pretty good at that. I don't really give expecting somebody to give me a gift back. I mean, or maybe we aren't thinking that. Maybe we're thinking, yeah, that's exactly what I do. But even if we're thinking that, try this one on, okay? So I was reading an article about regifting, and it's become a lot more popular. And it's also becoming a little more socially acceptable, according to this study I was reading. So, but there are all kinds of rules in this article. It really made me laugh. It was like, well, the person can't know you regifted, so you have to give to a different group of friends. You know, if someone gave from this group of friends, you make sure you give it to someone from that group of friends. And it was all these rules about subterfuge, and it just seemed very messy. But if you give someone a gift and you find out they've given it to someone else, how does that feel? You know, and if you're not completely okay with that, then there's some string there, right? Yeah. So anyway, I just thought that was interesting. Then there's a story. I don't know how many of you saw in the last few weeks. There's been a photo that's gone viral of a New York policeman in Times Square buying some boots for a homeless man. And the story was that it was a really cold night, and this cop saw this man without any shoes, and so he's quoted in, you know, the newspaper article saying, well, you know, I had on two pairs of wool socks and a pair of boots, and I was cold, so I felt bad for this guy. So he went to the Skechers, you know, store up the street and bought him some socks and boots. And then as he was putting them on, a tourist happened to be walking by and took a photo on her phone and posted that, and that's the photo that went viral. So I love this quote from the cop. He says, "The homeless man smiled from ear to ear. It was like I gave him $1 million. And then he told the New York Times he keeps the receipt from the boots in his vest to remind him that sometimes people have it worse." So this really heartwarming story of giving, you know. But then a couple of weeks later, I don't know how many of you heard the follow-up, right? So someone sees this guy again without shoes, and because the photo's viral, they, you know, recognize him. And so some of the journalists start researching. Well, he's not homeless. He's got an apartment. He said that he took the shoes home and left them in his apartment because they were very valuable. And he was afraid somebody would steal them and he might even get hurt in the process. So, you know, whole different spin on the story in a way. So does that change anything from the generosity of the giver? Does it change anything from the quality of the gift? You know, it's kind of interesting to think about. So, so your task, should you choose to accept it, is to break into groups of maybe about four people and to think about something that either something that's coming up for you about a gift that you feel pretty sticky about, you know, where you know about your own strings, or think about, you know, you're going to be getting a gift maybe in a couple of days of strings attached, or, you know, somehow working with this topic in a personal way for you. Or it can be a historic example, you know, something that's happened. But whatever you're thinking about, the goal of having this conversation together is to really think about how do we shift the feeling of attachment? You know, how can it really be a true giving without the strings from your own side? Or if it's the opposite, if it's somebody who's got strings on you, think about, well, how can you work with that in a positive way? You know, somehow coming up with the action plan that's really positive. That's what I'm hoping will come out of the discussion. So if you wouldn't mind breaking up into groups, and if you want to identify somebody to be your speaker, so we'll have a little discussion afterwards. I'll give you about, let's see how much time we got, about 10 or 12 minutes to talk, and then we'll come back together. Welcome back. I got to get little snippets of some lively conversations, so that's great. So in particular, was there anything that stood out for any of the groups that was like a really profound illustration or something that somebody's just burning to share? Anybody have anything like that? Guilt. You want to say more about that?
I would love to. We had a wide range of guilt, from the guilt of receiving overly extravagant stuff and the, you know, I guess resentment of past, you know, slights or expectations. We had the guilt of someone not buying meaningless stuff for us that we didn't want, instead of over a whole lifetime just getting that one nice pine cone or stick that that would have meant so much more. And the best story we had was, you Which one is that? All right, I'll tell the story. It's not really about Catholic guilt, but it's more about the feeling that someone is giving you something and they haven't taken the time to really know who you are. This gentleman's family is vegetarian, and the people who are coming to Christmas dinner are, majority of them are Muslim, and his father sent him a Christmas ham. And so we're trying to figure out what to do with that ham. And it's the awesomest gift ever. And we're also dealing with the guilt of feeling like we have this family, and instead of the adults all giving presents, we're all going to give it to one niece. And someone is still feeling residual guilt that they're not giving everyone else presents. We don't know how to deal with that either. So lots of guilt to go around.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Liz. And was that a theme for anybody else just to show hands? Okay, so this was just the guilt group over here. Okay. All right. So I feel compelled to address guilt, since we talk about that a fair bit when we talk about purification. So in Tibetan, there's not even a word for guilt, right? Because they talk about it in terms of regret. And regret is like that feeling you have. The example they always give is, if you've just drunk poison and you didn't know it, but now you've realized it, that's regret. You wish you hadn't done that, right? But you don't feel guilty about doing that. So, you know, transforming that, the feeling where we make it worse with the guilt, into just regret. Like, if it's something that we regret and we can change, great. If it's something we regret and we can't change, then we purify. Either way gives us a way to sort of think about letting it go and moving on. So I know, easier said than done, but it's a place to start. Yeah. Okay. Thanks, Group A. Anybody else? Anybody else got something to share? Yeah, Lamala.
We had an example in our group where one of the fathers is unhappy because when his children have a birthday party and they invite about 30 children, then they get 30 presents and it's piled up on the table and it's just way too much gifts. So, you know, they were thinking that it was just too overwhelming and they don't really have the feeling of the generosity and so forth. So we were thinking of how we can address that, what we can do. So, you know, like giving away some of the gifts or... bless you. Or, you know, maybe just having a party with no presents just to have fun. Or we were thinking of, you know, different ways of celebrating rather than asking people to give too many, all these gifts.
Yeah, so that's a really interesting question, right, whether we're talking about this holiday coming up or birthdays or any time that, that gifts are given, is sort of what are some different ways to channel it. You know, I think some adults have come up with some different ideas of giving to a charity of their choice or, you know, different things like that. And back in the summer, some of you might have heard me talking about a guy who, I think it was his 65th birthday, he decided to do 65 acts of kindness, and that he was saying it was the best birthday he ever had, you know. And I've seen even children do that. I mean, I know it's rough for a 2-year-old, you know, but seeing even children who were motivated to do something similar. So, you know, I think there are out-of-the-box ways we can look at it. It's a really important question, I think. Yeah. Thanks for bringing it up. There's a hand in the back.
In our group, we developed the question about whether obligation, when you gave out of obligation, whether it would still be generosity. Mm-hmm. So if you received a gift and you feel at that moment, oh, I should return this gift, you know, or not return it as in give it back, but return it as in give something to that person as well. Or, you know, just giving out of obligation, like, you know, I feel like I should give a gift to my UPS man and my trash man and my, you know, or all the people in my work, you know, and just giving, and there's not necessarily strings attached. You don't care if they give it to somebody else, you know, but you're just giving out of obligation. Is that still generosity? That's the question we developed.
Yeah.
We all kind of had, you know, some takes on it, but we thought we would pose that question to the group as a whole.
Yeah. I think I heard other groups speaking about similar things. Yeah. I have a take on that, but I'd be curious if anybody else has something they want to say first. Yeah, Patrick.
Could it be inspiration rather than obligation?
Could you repeat that so everybody can hear it? Yeah.
Could it be inspiration rather than obligation? The fact that you thought about the trash carrier when you haven't before.
Yeah. So tell me if it's the same thing that you're saying, Patrick, because this is what I was thinking about, is you can change it from your side, right? I mean, it might initially come as a thought of obligation, but then you can change, you can still give it without the thought of obligation if you really work on it from your own mind, right? Is that the same thing that you're saying?
Sort of.
And how is it different? Because I want to make sure I'm not just putting words in your mouth.
I don't like to give everyone a gift for Christmas. But I woke up this morning and someone popped in my head, and I went and tried to find that person to give them something.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I didn't feel obligated at all. In fact, I haven't found them yet, so they might not get it. This person doesn't even know me, so it doesn't. I don't feel obligated at all.
Right.
So the trash man might get it, for instance. But.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's all kinds of ways we can transform. Hand back here.
So I think part of the obligation is if it locks you into a time crunch where you have to do it, by tomorrow. But doing it ahead of time, like he said, where it's unexpected, makes it pure fun. And so I think if maybe we all had it planned out ahead of time where it feels like a surprise for everyone, then it feels like pure giving and pure fun instead of, oh my gosh, I've got 24 hours and I've got to find a sweater. So anyway, that's my thought.
Yeah. So that it's the 23rd and I still have 10 people on my list feeling, right? That's not a fun one, right? Yeah. And so I think all these tricks, and I welcome more that people have to say, all these tricks help us work with our own mind from our side, because we were talking in another group about how you can't change the other person, right? You can't change what their expectation is or how they feel about your gift or you're not giving or whatever, but you can work on your own mind. Yeah. Louise.
Our group talked a lot about paying gifts forward. When kindnesses or gifts were done to us, we were more likely to, it changed us that we wanted to go ahead and give. And one example was, I was at the vet's office one day, and this little old lady came in with a cat, and she didn't have enough money to treat this urinary tract infection, so the receptionist was itemizing the bill. And then her neighbor was at the vet's as well with her cat, and she said, well, I will pick up the cost for the medication for her. And then another person, who and didn't even know this person, said, well, I'll pick up the lab test. And then I just chimed in and said, well, I'll pick up the doctor visit. So it's that paying it forward kind of thing. And then there was another one about the person that went through the drive-thru that paid for the person's meal behind, you know, unknowing that. And yes, there are times when our group felt like we give, and there are some strings attached to it, but the more we do it, the less those strings become binding, and the more freeing. So we're setting for the future of just being able to give. And then we also talked about kids as well. How do we talk to our kids about giving, you know, and giving from their heart? And we talked about planting that seed at a young age, and even though they may not be willing to give, that you've planted that seed so that in the future that they will realize that and be generous as well.
Yeah. So that's a lot of juicy things you talked about there.
And we're a juicy group.
No doubt. One of the things that I love the story about, you know, you pay for the person behind you in the
line at the drive-thru, and then there's the ripple effect often, right? I mean, not always. You can't give with that expectation, but, you know, that happens a lot. And so, you know, our choices can have positive influence in ways we don't even necessarily imagine. There's something else you mentioned at the beginning I wanted to pick up on, but now I lost it because I don't have single point of concentration. Yeah, I think it was something about that, but I lost it. When it comes back, I'll say something. So, yeah, anybody else have anything from their group? Yeah. Yeah.
So I like to give. I absolutely love, I give people all kinds of stuff. But I was talking about, there is the attachment of, I give to make people happy, strictly to make people happy.
Right.
But if they're not happy,
yeah.
Then, I if I give my niece a gift and she doesn't like it, the reaction I have in myself is, you know, so there is some attachment even when you're giving just purely to make people happy.
Right. I think that's really an excellent point, because I think that's one of the subtler ones that we maybe don't realize, but it's so pervasive. I mean, I think very few of us give and feel just as good about it if the person didn't like it as we do if they did, right? So it's really an excellent point. And I remembered what I was going to say, and it's a tie-in to what Louise said, which is, but it's the practice over time where we get better, right? Because even that we can get better at, right? Like I did my best in trying to find something. I had a good intention. And then what happens after that? Not in my control, you know. But it's hard. I mean, yeah, that's no small thing. I think I saw a lot of heads nodding as you were talking, so I don't think you're alone with that. Yeah, over here.
Oh, I thought she was. Touching on that thought, we have a teenage, and one thing we talked about is we have a teenage daughter that is into photography, and so we get her these, and she's in a time of her life where it's like nothing we get for her is good enough, so, you know, we get her a very expensive camera, and, oh, we should have gotten a better one or whatever, and so there's the, I think that's guilt that we have, oh, we didn't get a nice enough camera, so that's, I don't know what that means. And we also had touched upon the concept of that someone else touched on as well about being uncomfortable receiving gifts of great financial value.
Mm-hmm.
And that in this particular problem, this person was talking about a cultural difference where giving these expensive gifts was so meaningful to the other person who was giving it, and how to accept those gifts and not feel guilty.
Did
that
you come
make
up,
sense?
Yeah, did you come up with any strategies for that? Because it's come up twice now. I'm just wondering what people think about it. I mean, one strategy is to feel obligated and next time give them an expensive gift, right?
I don't think we ever came up with a real solution, did we? Working on it.
Yeah, sure.
Working on the ability to accept it so that the other person, it's making the other person happy to give that very expensive gift. And to let them, I don't know what the word for it, accept it and let them be happy.
Yeah. So to allow them to get the happiness that they want from giving their gift.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's hard.
It is hard. Oh, I think a lot of these things are hard. Yeah. There was someone behind. Yeah.
It's similar predicament. The generous giving just because it makes you happy to give. Came up, and what happens when you give to someone just because it makes you happy and you know you're hoping it will make them happy and they're not expecting it and they have nothing for you and it makes them feel guilty.
Yeah, we get that a lot this season, don't we? Do people have strategies for that? Yeah.
In our group, we were talking about this. When you know there's an attachment, or you know that it's a special occasion, or like, you know, special time of year, or, you know, Valentine's, birthdays, or Christmas, but just actually don't avoid giving to that person and try to. We talked about giving at random times to random people, let's say the bus driver or somebody,
mm-hmm.
but then also give to the people that you do give to work on the attachment. So you don't, let's say, like in 12 weeks, I'm going to give on my father-in-law a book, So I'll just give them a book, but at random. So then it'll be like out of the blue. I'm not expecting anything, but I just know that I'm going to give them that. And it's not like on a birthday, so that then he'll say, oh, well, he gave me that on a birthday. So then he can't say, well, get attached and say, well, I better give something on his birthday. That's what we thought. That's one good idea, like a strategy that we thought of.
Okay, so one way to help not create that sort of, you know, keeping score is to do it more randomly.
Yeah, okay. Yes.
Did anybody see that article? I saw it on the Internet this week where it talked about the body language of how to tell whether or not somebody appreciates your gift. Yeah, and it was describing, okay, if they're doing this, then that means they don't like your gift, and if they're doing that, then it means that they like your gift. And I thought, ew. I will.
In the back.
When it comes to gifts that are not necessarily material, is there a way to work on the attachment by saying, I'm going to give you a gift that is a prayer. I'm going to send you great energy today. I'm just going to think about you and think about all this, you know, great things that you should feel in this moment. Because we often say, thank you for the thoughts. I'm not sure whether or not that's more of a, you know, thing that we learn to say, or whether it's something that we really feel. But I think a really good way of working on the attachment is just saying, I already, you know, this is what I'm thinking about you. I'm truly praying for you. Or if the person doesn't pray, I'm sending you great energy. And that's it.
Yeah, I think that's lovely. It's a great way for us to practice. We can do it any time. We can do it while we're standing in line at the grocery store. Right, I mean, it's something we can really cultivate as a general attitude.
Yeah.
It can really help us be more generous, there's no doubt. Yeah. And I think, you know, there's also instruction when you're making actual offerings or imagining making offerings that you can put everything in there, right? I mean, Keith knows this story. I have a truck that I used to have that I loved. And I still put it in the mandala when I'm making offerings because it was something that, you know, I had attachment to, so I keep trying to give it away, even though, I mean, it's long sold and someone else has it, and I don't know its story anymore. But, you know, just to keep offering these things because it helps us loosen the attachment. So I think it's really a wonderful, wonderful example. Yeah. So these two comments here, and then I think we need to give His Holiness a chance. No, please, please.
Briefly, I didn't send Christmas cards this year for the first time since I can remember, and I was attached to my reputation sending it. And I wrestle with that when I get them, somewhat successfully so far.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really important piece because reputation, I think, is part of what gets wrapped up in all this, right? If our reputation wasn't in there, a lot of the obligation would go away, right? Yeah. Good point.
I'm going to piggyback on that one, actually, because it's about Christmas cards. So, you know, send out the Christmas cards, and then you get the Christmas card from the person you didn't send the Christmas card to, and you're like, ah, man. All right, so I'm going to hurry up and send it. But there's just a certain amount of assumption in there that that person who sent the Christmas card has the same sort of thought process that I do, that they expect now, that I, you know, they would expect one from me. And I think that's a pretty big assumption to make. Yeah, maybe they don't feel that way, and I don't know. Is there a conversation that you can just honestly have with people and say, "Hey, when you give me a gift or something, you know, what is it that you want from that? What are you trying to get from that? You know, nothing, something, exactly." Why can't we live in a world like that?
Well, I think with certain relationships we can do that. Yeah. So, and you're making me laugh, Jim, with the story about the cards because there was a study done back in the 70s. A professor sent out 700 Christmas cards to random addresses. Like, he didn't know any of the people, and he just put, like, some of his own personal information in it. He got 200 cards back. So, you know, not quite half, but some percentage of people felt the obligation to reply, even though they clearly didn't know him because he didn't know them, you know. So, yeah. So. Okay. Well, thanks so much for all this great talk and ideas of how to work with our own attachments. This is wonderful. So now I'd like to shift into a little bit of a discussion about cultivating inner peace. And we'll let His Holiness do the heavy lifting. But I pick this in particular as a little bit of a pep talk for anybody who's finds this time of year difficult. And that's certainly not true for everyone, but I just know culturally sometimes it is. And so one of the things that I want to talk about in this is, of course, from His Holiness's perspective, from the Buddhist perspective, world peace comes through inner peace, right? And His Holiness has a great quote on that that I wanted to read. He says, one arrives at peace mainly through inner peace. First, the individual mind should develop peace, and this will eventually extend into family and society. In this way, the public can influence leadership. While anger and hatred destroy our inner peace, compassion, forgiveness, a sense of brotherhood or sisterhood, contentment, and self-discipline are its basis. Peace can develop through practice and strengthening these good inner qualities. We should then propagate this inner disarmament in family life and educational institutions. So I love this idea of inner disarmament, right? That's a really clear way that we're not talking about external things. So some of you may have seen this. I've shown this once before, but I got a lot of requests for in emails for people who wanted the link to this, so I thought maybe it had something worth showing again. So it's about 6 minutes. This was a talk His Holiness gave this summer in Scotland. And this particular bit, the whole talk was called Be the Change. And this particular bit is obviously on inner peace. So, roll tape.
Who have such mental state, easily manipulate like that. So, we all have the same potential. So, the point is, we usually these things take for granted, not much pay attention. That's, I think, I consider my sort of duty to remind people: you have precious things already there. Now pay more attention about that. That way, your life become more happier. Your mind can maintain more. Calm mind is very essential. Both fields, good health, then our intelligence, in order to utilize or in order to become effective, calm mind is very important. Once your mind too much sort of polluted, agitation like that, or too much attachment, then our wisdom, our intelligence cannot see the object objectively, because emotion too much sort of one-sided, negative, hatred, anger, suspicion, or too much attachment. So with that level of mental state, you can't carry, you cannot sort of function properly about potential or intelligence. So, two things. The calm mind brings your healthy body. Calm minds see things more realistically, objectively. So, now question, how to develop calm mind? Calm mind, out of fear, impossible. Calm mind, out of too much of anger, too much attachment, impossible. Then, calm mind actually very much deals with self-confidence. Self-confidence, there are two kinds. Blind self-confidence, over self-confidence, unrealistic sort of self-confidence. That is dangerous. but self-confidence on proper sort of basis. That's very necessary in order to develop calm mind. Now, how to develop self-confidence properly? Usually, fear mainly comes from others.
In relation to others.
And anger. Occasionally, sometimes angry oneself. That also happens. Sometimes there's some important thing. Forget. Then say, oh, I forget that. That's not very serious. Okay, few cases. Sometimes it happens. But mainly, it's sincere anger comes to us, mainly, as a community, as a community member. That also, unknown people, we not sort of develop angry to unknown people, but only those people who often you see meeting. Yeah. So therefore, when we develop sense of concern of their well-being, develop, then the very basis of anger is no longer there. You really cherishing them. So, even if it's small sort of disagreement, small sort of causing irritation, but on the superficial level, or intellectual level, he done something bad, or she done something bad to me, like that. But deeper emotional level, not much disturbed. Still, you see, keep. They are part of our community, part of me, part of we. My future depends on them. I should be more concerned about their well-being. Then, the anger, attachment, these things, much sort of, the intensity much reduced. Clear. That's the way.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome His Holiness
okay.
The Dalai Lama.
Just pause it. I'll give you the cliff notes on what he said. So he says that the anger and the attachment intensity will reduce, and then through this way we develop self-confidence, and there's no basis for fear or distrust if we have that self-confidence. And since you respect others and consider them part of we, part of me, you can deal with them honestly and with transparency. And through this brings self-confidence and reduces suspicion and distrust, and that's the way to develop a calm mind. That was my cliff notes on the last bit. So he leads off this bit talking about these concrete tips. Well, he doesn't lead off with that, but he gives concrete tips for developing a calm mind, right? And he mentions that we often take things for granted and don't pay attention. So if we pay attention and have gratitude, how might that shift? I mean, do you all see that in real ways in your life of helping with a calm mind? Does gratitude help? Yeah. Anybody have any connections with sort of our previous discussion and this? Like, anything anybody wants to share?
I was just thinking as you said that how much gratitude helps seems to help with a calm mind, because so much of the agitation we have is based on what we don't have, or worrying about what we don't have, worrying about what we want. And being grateful for what you do have eliminates a lot of that. I think being able to say, you know, what I have is enough, or I'm happy with what I have, and not always chasing after something else and that having that agitation. That was just what occurred to me.
So maybe two sides to that. That there's the moment that you're feeling gratitude, it's hard to not feel. I mean, it's hard to feel other things, right? You're feeling the gratitude. And the other is that the training of always feeling like what you've got's enough can help counter that grasping for something else. Is that a fair restatement? Yeah. Okay. Excellent. Yeah. Anybody else have thoughts on it? No? Okay. Oh, yeah.
That's right.
Kevin?
Kind of following up what you said. When I remind myself
you know, about the good things I have, or show some gratitude. It may be very fleeting, but like you said, for that moment, it is gone, and it builds up and builds up. So it's easier to remind myself to think of the good things I have. Whereas a couple years ago,
yeah,
I wouldn't even have that, ever have that impulse. Like I would just go down the hole of like the things that I'm unhappy with. So I guess my point is that it's those baby steps that gradually it builds up, and
yeah,
rather than thinking that you always have to be like at that level, you know.
Right. So. Yeah, that's an excellent point. I think it's there's a theme that, like Louise was talking about too from her group, that whatever these positive states of mind are, we practice them first with these little baby steps, maybe in faking it till we make it, right? Like, but then over time, we can extend the way we feel it, and it comes to our mind more often, more easily. Yeah, so it really is like weightlifting, right? Our mind gets stronger with these positives, so there is the ability to shift it. That's what I'm hearing is your experience. Yeah, excellent. Yeah. Anybody else?
So it's just a personal experience, a story I often remind myself of, how a calm mind is much more useful than an agitated one. I was at a conference, and I love Diet Coke, and I wanted one, and so I went to the machine on the floor, and it was broken, and darn it, you know, the stupid machine, don't they maintain it, and why can't they, and the universe is against me, and once again, I'm a victim, and all this stuff, and I just... Ironically, I was there for a seminar about mindfulness.
Perfect, yeah.
So I thought I'd give that a try. And thought, okay, you know, I'm here right now. I have my health. I have my, you know, my change. I'm in a hotel that has other floors, that has other soda machines, and I got my soda. And, you know, I felt really foolish in for just a minute there, a little bit wise. And so that's what I always remind myself.
Yeah, and I think that's really an excellent point, that whatever our story is, we can key into it with the slightest provocation, right? I mean, we're good at our story, you know? And we don't each have the same story, but we each know our own story if we spend any time looking at our minds. And so being able to just take that pause and say, oh, does that really have to be how it is? Right? That's huge. You know, it's a small act, but its impact is huge. And being able to cultivate, following up on this theme, being able to cultivate more and more of those moments, allow for fewer and fewer of the universe is against me once, right? Yeah, that's a wonderful example. Yeah. And so His Holiness also mentions in the video about that having a sense of concern, developing a sense of concern for others' well-being, that gets rid of the basis for anger. Does that flow for y'all? Like, does that make sense? Do you think that's right? Because anger is one of the biggest disturbances to our inner peace, right? And so figuring out what we can do about anger, that's going to help. Yeah, Keith.
And what I loved about that part is when he talked about, it was short, but he said you could recognize that you've been hurt or that something's been done wrong to you, but it doesn't have to go deep. It doesn't have to hurt you deep. You don't have to let your mind, what I was interpreting, he was saying, your mind get into the story and, oh, woe is me, and how did this person hurt me? It could be very simple. You know, that was a mean act. You know, I still have compassion for this person, and they're in my community. That was an act they did was wrong. I don't have to go down a deeper, darker path with that.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty impactful for me. We could still, perhaps until we're enlightened, recognize when things have been done wrong with us, to us, and move on from them.
Yeah, I think that's really an important point, Keith, because you're not having to say what they did was fine, right? It's not saying that. It's just saying, okay, that was lousy, but I got a choice about what comes next. Yeah, that's a really great point. There's a hand in the back.
So by understanding that what the person did wrong and understanding that it might have hurt your feelings, by caring for other people, you can maybe question, oh, why did they do that to me? Like, why... What was their mindset when they did this thing, instead of thinking about yourself and how you were hurt by this person?
That's a great shift. Yeah, the focus goes on to, oh, that old saying, hurt people, right? So, yeah, that's a beautiful point. Yeah, and I think we can conclude on that lovely point because, as usual, I've run over time. So, how fantastic that we all participated in this hour. Thank you, everyone, for your role in that. And as much as you're interested in doing that, let's see if we can remember a few of these ideas that we've talked about today, the helpful ways to counter things and carry them out into our week and just continue our field experiments, seeing what works and what doesn't, and just keep working with it. So thanks, everybody.
Okay, if you turn to the white prayer book again, to the first pink sheet, we'll start with the dedication verses from Master Shantideva. But I'd like to read their prayer list first. Prayers for a happy rebirth. All those killed by natural and man-made disasters, including all killed at Sandy Hook Elementary School. All the Tibetans who have been killed or have taken their own lives in the struggle for religious freedom. Venerable Tunden, Clem William Akins III, Andrew Bartley, John Brandt, Bill Burke, Brendan McNeil Freeman, Dolores Amancusa, Shelley Lofton, Bo Lozoff, Arnold Negri, Sue Pasquinelli, Clara Robinson, Greg Subchuk, Jean Tai, and Ninja the Cat. Job search. Eve Ihara, Beth Andrew, Gary Kane, Daniel Cunningham, Harish Farma, Jenny First, Michael Fultz. Ed Godwin, Kate Harvey, Andrea Johnson, Lindsay McGrath, Brian Miller, Sandy Mitchell. Evelyn Morales, Catherine Myers, April Rocker, Tony Sloan, Michelle Thompson, Lori Todd, SS, Anadine Silver, and Sarah. Difficulties of body and or mind. Kyabje Lama Zopa Rinpoche, who is manifesting health difficulties based on our karma. His Eminence, Ling Rinpoche, Venerable Chirkila. All those harmed by natural and man-made disasters. For the Tibetan people and for the Chinese authorities, may the nonviolent path lead to full reconciliation and religious freedom. Clem William Akins III's family, Denise Allen, Jim Barnes, A.J. Bartley's family, Shirley Bennett, John Brandt's family, Bill Burke's family, Ron Burroughs and family, Victoria Easterday Clark, Hester Clifford, Allegra Dahlquist, Larry Davis, Jack Doger, Frank Ferreira, Tracy Finley, Carrie First, Machcha Godesha, Gary Goldberg, Mildred Gooch, Henry Greiner, Janet Hagos and family, Hannah Davis Helton, Hillary, Lola Hilliard, Leslie and Joan Inman, Kenny Jackson and Buddy, Jasper, Serena, Cass, Ella, Andrew Johnson, Sugi Jones, Helen Kasanoff, Arthur Katz, Shanti and Kurt Latimer, Aunt Lori, Alyssa Luck, Carolyn and Granger Marley, Bobby Martin, Kathy McDonald, Arnold Negri's family, Adrian Oliver, Jamine Pandya, Jay Pandya, Lively Pasque, Catherine Paul, Howard Perry, Mary Peterson, Aunt Polly, Sura Noel, Quinlan and her family, Duncan Quinn, Rybush family, Richard Robson, Reuben family, Paula Sable, Albert Sontz, Rosemary Cease, Marilyn Sims, family of Greg Sobchuk, Mamie Stark, David Underwood, Dion Washington, Jill and Travis, Claudia and Vic Williams, Suzanne Williams, Judith Wormser, Casey the dog, Fabio the dog, Skippy the dog, Zeke the dog, and his human family. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be free from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. Savior of the snowland teachings and transmigratory beings,
who extensively clarifies the path that unifies emptiness and compassion. To the lotus in the hand, Lord Tenzin Gyatso, I beseech, may all your holy wishes be fulfilled. The one who mastered his speech at a very young age, the one with great patience who received the name Avatara, the one with great precision who spread the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa on bliss and void, Lama ornament of the yellow hat tradition, please remain until samsara ends. You uphold the subduer with more way, who serve as the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Manjunath's victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplished magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, Savior, myself, and others, your disciples. Please, please live long. And then seven green tara mantras for Geshe-la's long, healthy, happy life. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. 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 Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re